Meditation is a very simple process, too simple for words. Meditation should be simple, never becoming more complex, or where do you end? The fact is, there's so little to do that our ego may find it very difficult or perhaps unacceptable because of its simplicity. The results are so profound that we tend to interrupt the process and spoil everything by trying to explain or analyze how it works. What we should do as a result of meditation is to observe, wonder, and just simply begin to believe the marvelous world of effects taking shape before our very eyes. Problems fall away by themselves, good things just happen, and everything falls into place without scheming or planning. It's most humiliating to our pride, which is used to huffing and puffing and making things work that only backfire, and giving good reasons for everything that ever went wrong with our lives. In fact, our mind becomes so empty of worry and planning that we have virtually nothing to do except to understand more, appreciate more, wonder more, see more clearly to avoid problems, which makes things easier so that we worry even less. Worry once substituted for the natural concern we never had. We just had to worry to ennoble ourselves. It seemed quite normal to worry. But worry is really the compulsive activity of the mind without faith, in the dark, priding itself in solving the problems it created by the same worry. Worry is a false virtue. Guilty or failing to be creatively concerned, we needed to fill our minds with something, even when we didn't have anything to be concerned about. It did seem the natural thing to do. Could we admit to our failings? Of course not. If we didn't have such a busy mind, we would be forced to see our guilts and our commitment to reality. So we worried about the war, about the kids. Worry made us industrious busybodies who meddled in every kind of affair for the greater pride value. But then we got involved and created bigger problems we couldn't solve with worry. Again, worry is the action of the mind in the dark, forgetting the truth, proudly trying to fix what it did in the dark. We couldn't stop worrying before because we didn't want to stop. It had an ego value for us. It always seemed like love for others. It made us forget our empty, faulty, meaningless existence. It won badges of honor for this or that cause. Had we a grain of true concern, we would never had anything to worry about, no great activity of the mind to testify to our ego's greatness. Oh, how the vain ego loves to play God and gloat over all the faults of creation. How little do we realize that we ourselves unconsciously project those problems so that we might be continuously excited over those imperfections of creation and be challenged again and again to change them for what is better, that in reality is much worse, that again challenged the spirit of vainglory to new lows of triumph. How desperate we've been for others to cry out in need for us. How we needed their needs, and in helping made them need us again. We were glad that no one was perfect, so that we were glorified in worrying and coming to their aid like an angel from heaven. We once enjoyed taking accounts of all of our grudges and reveling in the memories of past glories. This was the substance of our ugly pride. It would sit and worry and reminisce about conquests and peer into its storehouse of intellectual achievements. The mind abounded in the knowledge that testified to our glory, that outshouted our growing conscience to the contrary. To all this noise was added the din of distraction that made us forget only how wrong we were. And it made us forget the truth, that we labored not for ourselves, which we want to believe, but labored instead for the spirit of vainglory. We labored for effect. With a few pretty words we tickled other deluded souls to tickle our vanity back again with approval. We infected the world with problems in the guise of love, so that we would have something to gripe about, and gloat over, and worry about, all of which made us seem like superior beings. In exchange for a sense of worth, power, and glory, we traded our bodies. We served a wrong purpose, hoping upon hope that the purpose we served would be our very own. With worry we hoped to serve our ego a notion of its concern for others, in place of our failure to love them, and to mask the fact that we've used them to worry. What helpless, pitiful things we created. What rebellious Frankensteins we sired to fight against our need to feel saintly. who used our hypocrisies to champion their ego glory. In the guise of making them better, we made them imperfect, so we would have a full-time preoccupation of worry to forget our miserable selves. That all must go, and fall away it will. Psychic vampires, wolves in sheep's clothing no more. The deep flaw in your nature is your ego desire for vainglory, power, love, pleasure, status and importance. You have denied your conscience for a few pieces of silver, sold your body and your labor for a few lies about your faulty, guilty self. Seeking power and glory and justifying yourself all day long, you are in conflict with reality, whose judgment pierced your illusions as fast as you created them. And now you hate yourself or feel sorry for yourself, and you're worried again. Maybe you're in the last stages of worry, fabricating dream stuff, arguing with yourself, piously seeking intellectual truths as if to agree with your nagging conscience and to make a mockery of its judgment. But then we still feel guilty, for it's the wrong kind of agreement to seem pious when we're not. To agree intellectually with the truth does not make you right, but to live from its urgings and to unfold from its light like the flower does the sun. If I were God, you may think secretly, I could never forgive me for what I've done, so how could he possibly forgive me? Do you resent yourself for not forgiving yourself? Do you judge the judgment upon yourself in hope of rising higher than that judgment upon you, in much the same way as you do with people? And so you judge the judgment upon yourself that would not be judgment had you not believed and judged that way in your heart, all because you vainly attributed your shortcomings to your Creator, as though no greater justice and truth existed besides you in this universe. By judgment, you vainly attempted to rise higher than judgment, but only in illusion. And in being sorry for yourself, you forgive that judgment as though you were forgiving a sinner for not forgiving and hurting you. And between these two extremes of insanities, you are dying. Sometimes people's eyes glaze over as if in a trance when they are caught up in such a sorry, hate of hate, judgment of judgment ecstasy. It's imperative now that you begin to see all these things and begin to face yourself. It's imperative that you have the right intent before practicing meditation. For meditation is a special discipline designed to express the potential pattern. When we have found the light, which we should conscientiously and earnestly seek, it must then be dramatized in our lives. Knowing and doing are two separate things that now must be made one. So our motive first must be to seek reality, and then to extend that special knowing through the practice of meditation. What is revealed in the secret place of understanding is infused in the mind and body through its matching technology, meditation. But not just any kind of meditation. The truth must have a truthful way of expressing itself. If your motive is not right, you are in danger of becoming locked to or fixated upon the words or the method, which would then become hypnosis. If you do not match the proper method to the true knowing, you will block the pathway of expression. When both motive and technology match, you flower and grow, and there is no frustration, no fear, no worry, even over the reappearance of old conditions that are played back for correction. A true intent awakens us to a level of awareness, which makes available to us a new power, containing an information value to remold our minds and redirect our lives from within. Without this truth or enlightenment emerging through the lens of the consciousness to light our way, we tend to become hung up with everything or anyone supposed to help or lift our spirit. Although you are able to see more than others in this state, refrain from lording it over others and from actually making decisions and giving too much advice. Just be. Don't even conscientiously take thought of what to say and when to say it. Don't plan. Let that be spontaneous and natural. Much of your awakening will occur after meditation, at work or play. Meditation is invariably a painful process because it awakens us to our hidden failings. Eventually the shock of discovery affects a change in our nature. All change, good or bad, tends to cause discomfort. Your habits may represent a need to soothe the process of deterioration caused by emotion, namely resentment. Other excitements, like too much love and affection, designed to help us escape and forget our faults, make us feel important and improved, better in some way, also cause degeneration and change in unsuspected ways. Something may try to prevent you from meditating and seek to persuade you that it's all unnecessary. Your record player may break. At inconvenient times, people intrude, ring the phone and doorbell. Just about everything may happen to prevent you from this communication with reality. Meditation itself may become boring. It is less and less exciting as we lose the initial contrast of relief. Precisely at the point where you have succeeded in becoming quiet, a flurry of old thoughts and memories, perhaps even commercials, bubble up for review. As we live calmly, reacting less to environment, thoughts trapped and supported by emotion, as well as a way of life caused by conditioning, once answerable only to outside pressures, are once again called to mind. This may happen many times. You actually may relive an experience. If you redream it during sleep, you may play the part formerly required of you. For example, you may dream out hostility towards someone. Here you will recognize the buried sentiment. Why? Because while you did not meditate, you were subject to unseen powers, pressures, that moved you according to its design, while you believed it to be your will. As you meditate, you will observe by the light of truth what you once justified and thought normal, and become freed by a special kind of knowing, first by observation. Your hostilities, once needed to support your ambitions and pride, were thought normal, as I said, and therefore they went by unnoticed. New understanding will change your relationships in the future with people in the past and release their hold upon you from the grave. You may also dream out that scene where, instead of being angry, you are calm and patient. Thus you will know that a change has occurred. Do not meditate for oblivion. Allow thoughts to appear. Do not dissolve them before they emerge. Such is possible. Just watch and observe. Let them come. If your conscious mind wanders off downstream with them, something inside will snap you back to observe them again and break their hold over you, one by one, little by little. Any time you can observe a thought without being carried away with it, you will be able to master that thought process. As I said, one by one, through steadfast observation, you will destroy the totality of their power over you. While it's correct to push aside or dissolve distractions by watching them without anger or fear, do not do this with your bona fide guilts. I mean, watch them, but don't push them aside as you would distractions. Observe these and bear the accumulating pain graciously, without anger or fear or attempting to deal with them. Soon your past will disappear to the point of forgetfulness. You will begin to feel as though you were just born, made new. Babbling trivia and distractions will be poured out of your system, alternating with guilts. A level of distraction always conceals a layer of guilt. Step by step, life will lose its strangled hold and power to turn you on, tempt, uglify, and mislead you. Your need for distraction and escape will diminish to the point where you seem not to be interested in anything anymore. Bear this too patiently for a while. Wait until the wind of the Spirit of Truth to provide you redirection and motivation. You may also feel lethargic to the point of appearing to be lazy, not being able to do your work. Bear this too, as well as the criticism from others for it. What you think needs to be accomplished may be just ancient ties and obligation, or again perhaps appropriate services motivated wrongly by anger and fear, by wrong training. Meditate for the strength to do the right thing with the right motivation, or the strength to resist doing the wrong thing. Upon arising from meditation, you will find either the natural strength to accomplish your task or commitment, or suddenly such obligations will lose their importance and urgency, which means, of course, it was an entirely social pressure, emotion-based suggestion, having no real value to you or to the motivators. Often you experience emptiness. You will feel dull, unqualified as a person or teacher or parent. You will seem to have forgotten everything you know. Wait, new understanding is coming to modify what you once knew. Understand this too. The spirit departs for a while to test the inclination of the soul, to see if it will return to its old feelings. This recording is not an affirming process, nor is it a memorizing procedure. To learn it by heart will defeat the objective. It is basically a technology that quietens you, and by this awakens you to meaning. It introduces you so that you move from that meaning. It gives you back to yourself. For this reason, you may dispense with the hand-raising imagery, for that was only an exercise to enable you to control and connect mind, body, and soul together, to quieten you sufficiently to see meaning. From this point on, insight will take the place of imagination. Just the concentration of the hand and the observation through the middle of your forehead is sufficient as an exercise. Dispense with the imagery. Just be aware of your hand while looking through the middle of your forehead once you have connected up mind, body, and soul together and brought them in rapport to each other. Images and words are only noises. They can have no real therapeutic effect. At best, they can distract you from worry, fear, and pain so that you don't know that you are a problem to yourself and others. The image and noise level in your mind has replaced your awareness of truth. Without awareness, you make mistakes, suffer conscience, and grow to need words and images to argue against reality, as if to offset the deficiency with a fantasia of illusions and concepts. Verbal suggestions also tend to break a worry cycle that has accelerated your illness and problem. Saturated by suggestions and positive affirmations, you may seem to get better, but unfortunately, you might begin to believe in the therapeutic power of the word. What happens in reality is that you get sick at the slower normal pace. That is, until you are disturbed and begin to worry all over again. Words have no power to heal unless they lead you back to your true identity. There are certain key words which are used to excite you, turn you on, make you feel worthy, pump you up. Observe how you trap people into saying these words or doing these things for a turn-on value, an ego drive value. See also what you trade for them. Awareness is vital, but there are two kinds of awareness. A self-conscious, guilty awareness that doesn't know how to make anything right, makes a mess of everything by trying, then escapes from being aware of the problem as the last resort, as though it was the solution. Or the enlightened, healthy awareness that is able to come to grips with various pressures, which is able to keep problems outside and from getting under the skin. Your meditation will bring you to this healthy type of awareness, but this always includes a factor of light that shines in the darkness. You may actually see once invisible forces at work for the first time, not so good forces, by the way, and observe them working in you as well as others. The imagination is the no man's land for conference with your vain ego. Here it makes its appeal to your secret wishes. Don't be upset and try to deal with it. You may be somewhat alarmed at the powerful use it makes of the substance or ectoplasm of imagination. It makes you think terrible things to make you think that you are doing all the thinking. It tries thereby to make you feel unworthy of salvation and seeks an injunction against your meditating so that you will stop. You may be tempted to believe that if you stop, you will not see bad thoughts and everything will be all right. For goodness sake, don't stop meditating. At every level of growth, that invisible power will be there with a matching temptation. By observing the nature of that temptation, you will see by its appeal the nature of your ego and its special weakness. Repent of this. You cannot deal with these forces or voices on a psychological level because their origin is not psychological at all. In observing yourself, you will occasionally hear vile utterances coming from the subterranean unconscious, antagonistic to reason, just when you think your motive is sincere. This tends to make you doubt any original intention, causing you to give up meditation and observation. Just understand this. that you are observing a mind that has been controlled and shaped by other forces for a long period of time, for a purpose incongruous to its original design, that your physical body and mind, your thought stuff, is no longer the real you. You are the observer of all this. Once your desire is true and purified, you are able to observe what is untrue. What you observe is the old physical self, still under the hypnotic sway of subtle forces that seek to hold you as a slave and make you doubt and despair. Again, those thoughts are not you. What observes them is the real you. You do not put those thoughts into your mind. If you did, you could also change them on command, couldn't you? You may have once agreed with them or needed them. Because your body is still connected to the source of error outside, it's also taking shape from those signals and being used to communicate doubt to your soul so that you may doubt or fear that you can ever be right. So you are promoted to give in to sin, to serve your old master well. But right is observing the wrong. The error that has taken physical shape is using that stolen physical body, as it were. Just keep observing without anger or fear. Realize your need. Don't enter into a dialogue with these thoughts or voices. Just observe until your soul cries out to God. For the time being, don't call upon a name that you have been educated to accept, or else you may revive a conditioned reflex response to words that connect you to the outside world. The God, the Jesus, the Buddha, that you may have accepted via brainwashing, is not the real one. Many of us have accepted the Holy Spirit in a moment of excitement, a sort of religious experience that wasn't real. It was an unholy spirit instead, and by this you justified every sin, while you got worse. These voices may urge you with scriptures for this reason. Of course, they're scriptures incorrectly used. The wolves in sheep's clothing, posing as ministering angels of God, have purposely conditioned you to words and stolen you away from the real meaning of those scriptures, the real meaning of life and truth, and handed you over to error in the name of truth. Such tactics are used to confuse, confound, and anger you, so you'll be sucked down into despair. Your resentment rekindled against such teachers and memories and voices may make you angry and feel guilty. Make them look saintly for the depths of your depravity caused by your anger and hostility and guilt, and involve you with them again and again more than ever. The little voice of conscience is the voice of error. Sometimes you may hear two voices, one posing as good. Disregard them both. The truth rarely speaks to you with words, but is like a light that illumines the darkness and shows you plainly the nature of all things. It is a wordless knowing which goes beyond words and reveals the nature of words and the nature of deception. Thoughts that haunt and nag you can simply be emotions seeking expression or an emotional catharsis, but there are other factors that you must be prepared to see. Your own thoughts you could change if they were your own. Granted, there are suggestions in your mind that come from other people, so you will see these as well as their source, as you would never have before, but be prepared eventually to see a grotesque thing that you have become, once repressed from view, in the light of your enlightened consciousness. Again, do not react with fear or anger, perhaps with remorse, but nothing else. It may leave your body, contorting your features as it leaves, as it cannot stand upon holy ground when you meditate. Beware at all times so that it cannot return. He may use supernatural forces to frighten you, such tricks as moving the bedclothes, sounds of breathing, knocking, and the like. Just stay calm. Fear and anger will open the door of your mind again, which is his intent and design. Things may seem to get worse for a while, as far as your family life is concerned. Perhaps some sicknesses will reappear. But you will only be seeing, for the first time, properly, what you were hiding from view all these years. Your house was burning down, as it were, but you didn't want to know it. We also tend to experience insights and make the terrible mistake of hanging on to those memories in order to stimulate the body to recreate those feelings again. This is due to an old pattern that you once used on yourself to make the past live again. Objects and music, as well as words, have a kind of turn-on sentimental value. Under such a spell evoked by words, we can cause the body to re-experience a past excitement. With songs, symbols, and beads, we are able to re-stimulate false religious feelings and behavior that distracted us from our failings in the present. Words and ideas once had a power over the body to recreate an emotional experience, good or bad. The bad experience called upon you and compelled you to act in a certain way. Just by a signal or gesture, it turned you on. The recall of pleasant memories awakened the body to an old soft shoe. By this we forgot the unhappiness in the present. For example, think of a lemon and your mouth will water as if in the presence of a real lemon. Now, if you try to hang on to insights like this, you will cut yourself off from the source of that insight and fall down again. Then you will be back in the old rut of clinging to memories again. Don't be afraid to forget. Let your mind learn to be still, that you might receive more true experiences from that source, to become remolded and answerable to that new source within. Children often feel like they're saying or re-experiencing what they've done before. This has given rise to notions such as reincarnation. In reality, when we're young, we're not too far removed from reality. We see with spiritual eyes things far off, and a pattern of circumstances about to occur. Then our pride swells up. We tend to think we have a great power. Then, too, we become involved with emotional and worldly entanglements. By this, we become dull and brutish, so we tend to lose this great gift. A vision of things to come may occur with vague meaning. Do not try to make them work out, nor must you struggle to interpret their meaning. When this occurs, it will simply fit a preordained pattern, so that you will know that there is a pattern to this drama on earth, and a mysterious and mighty hand that fashions the course of creation according to his secret purpose. Now get ready for the meditation.